Live from Brood Awakenings Cafe in Eugene, Oregon. Thanksgiving edition of DJ Microbrew's FSCK, the Corporate Media. I'm DJ Microbrew, and it's Wednesday, the half moon at the end of November 2005. Here you go, enjoy the ride. I've mostly got an audio collage for you, but I'll bust in occasionally and say things whenever I feel like it, okay? Okay, yeah, that's that. So remember, don't hate the media. FSCK Corporate Media. Oh, and never forget, the revolution is brewing.
Good evening, and welcome to the 6th Annual Native American Music Awards.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
On November 15th, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting finally released a report from its Inspector General detailing the unethical behavior of former CPB Chairman Kenneth Tomlinson. The report was delivered to CPB more than 2 weeks ago. Shortly after its existence became public, Tomlinson resigned. Now we know why. In addition to launching a crusade to find and silence so-called liberal bias on PBS and NPR, Tomlinson actively schemed to get the Wall Street Journal its own TV show and threatened to cut off funding to PBS if the network didn't add more right-leaning programs. What's more, those hired under Tomlinson's watch had to pass a political litmus test, and existing CPB staffers were quizzed about their party affiliations and campaign contributions. According to Free Press campaign director Timothy Carr, this behavior most definitely broke the law.
The report found that Tomlinson indeed violated the Public Broadcasting Act, but there is no avenue, and they don't recommend any avenue for punishment.
Yet the full story has not yet been told. Tomlinson worked very closely with senior officials in the White House on the crusade to conservatively politicize public broadcasting, but that information, says Carr, is still missing in action.
We know that there is another report that was submitted to the CPB that the CPB has in their hands that has not been made public.
It may take an act of Congress to pry this mystery report loose. Meanwhile, calls for wholesale reform of the public broadcast system are gaining momentum, but it remains to be seen whether the political will exists to force meaningful change.
Sinclair Broadcasting does not take dissent lightly, especially from former employees. One of the company's star reporters got fired last year after he spoke out against Sinclair's decision to air a documentary that smeared John Kerry right before the election. Now the company's filed a lawsuit against Jonathan Lieberman seeking $17,000 in damages for allegedly violating the terms of his contract. According to the filing, Lieberman's public dismay about Sinclair's penchant to present, quote, biased propaganda constituted a divulging of confidential and proprietary information about corporate operations. The Society of Professional Journalists has condemned the court action as something that smells like an effort to punish a whistleblower.
Sony BMG gets caught selling copy-protected CDs which contain code that make computers running Windows vulnerable to malicious exploit. Several dozen Sony BMG music releases contain digital rights management software to prevent excessive copying, which gets installed when users insert the CD and use the onboard music player to listen to it. The problem is, the software contains code which allows it to hide its files from public view. This raises the troubling possibility that a hacker could exploit this code to seed machines with something damaging without a user's knowledge or consent. It's been estimated that more than 500,000 computer networks around the world contain at least one computer that's been compromised in this fashion. Sony BMG has since released a patch to uncloak the hidden files its copy-protected CDs leave on hard drives, but the company refuses to provide information on how to safely uninstall the software itself. What's worse, Sony BMG's program tampers with core functions of the Windows operating system, and improperly uninstalling the program can cause Windows itself to crash. Further digging into this story uncovered even more delicious irony, like the fact that many Sony BMG CDs contain a second program which transmits information from your computer to a server every time you play a copy-protected CD. And to top it all off, those who wrote Sony's copy protection software apparently pilfered open-source code in the process, which conceivably constitutes a violation of copyright law.
Next year's midterm elections could be the most expensive ever in terms of spending on political advertising. Projections call for $1.5 billion worth of ads. Last year's election cycle set a new record at $1.7 billion. More than a dozen candidates running for office next year have already started airing spots. The heaviest political spending will most likely take place in the states of California, Florida, Illinois, Minnesota, New York, and Texas.
And now, here's a Media Minutes Fast Fact. Don't like telemarketers? Sign up for the FCC's National Do Not Call Registry. But is it really effective? 51% of respondents recently surveyed about the registry say no. They still get calls they expected would be blocked. The Federal Trade Commission reports it still receives between 1 and 2,000 complaints a day about telemarketers. Even so, since the National Do Not Call Registry went online in 2003, only 6 fines have been levied against telemarketers who've ignored it. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
my gosh. Oh, I am so excited. This is really a big thing for me. I would like to thank my mom, my dad, everybody who's been behind me, my friends, my band. If you guys are out there, I love you all.
There was a farmer doing well, but then the NGO came. Oh, oh no, NGO, oh no, NGO, oh no, NGO, go back where you came. Oh.
Well, also, a new report that's been out for the oil recruitment program finding more than 2,000 companies benefiting.
Directly in Memphis, and the way that they wanted to see Clyde and Fatter were headlined. And when they arrived in Memphis, they got a telegram from the NAACP asking them not to perform. They called the meeting, called all the performers, and they decided that everybody was doing the work.
Seven, Jim Beer in the River.
My spirit cries. Grandfather looks at me with ancient eyes.
Sosie Saltwater.
Thank you. Performing the title song off their nominated CD, Glory, please welcome Triple Cross.
Music is the medicine. Derek Miller. Indian Boy, Indian Girl. Cecil Gray and the Red Dawn Blues Band. Sacred Land, Raven Hernandez.
Little boy play with the sticks in the stones, beat the sand.
Black Wolf Blues, Wade Fernandez. Too White-Handed, the Ken Rhine Band.
And the winner is...
Music is the Medicine, Derek Miller! Music is the medicine, bro!
What a feeling! I gotta thank a lot of keepers.
With the big Herald, or Chief Iron Bearer.
This is what records is all about. Winner of NAMA's 2001 Best Pop Rock Recording and 2002 Song Single of the Year, please welcome a diva in her own right, the ceaselessly stunning Jana, performing the song From Now On.
a hand for my dancer, Tina. Jamie on the drums, Stefan, thank you.
Let's find out who this year's Songwriter of the Year will be.
The nominees for Songwriter of the Year are...
Joseph Firecrow.
Two.
Tonema.
Maybe Mary had it right. Sneak away late some night. Leaving dancing on my brain like children stomping in the rain.
Wade Fernandez. Jim Beer in the River.
My soul is sick. My spirit cries. Grandfather looks at me with ancient eyes.
Arrogant Star.
Man, it was dark that night. Turned on the radio. What did the DJ say?
Winner is
Joseph Firecrow, Legends of the Warrior. Woo!
It's been said that when this artist plays and sings, centuries of his people's heritage, their suffering and happiness, their pride and accomplishments, and most of all, their honor shine brightly through.
Performing the song Legend of the Warrior off his NAMI and Grammy nominated CD, please welcome Joseph Firecrow.
Oh, no.
So if you're not blaming the corporate media, you are not paying attention.
The Rosebud Sioux Elementary School is a small concrete building down the street from the tribal headquarters. Its halls are decorated with Native American art and posters on school safety. Teacher Chris Mosner founded the 4th and 5th grade drum group. He recalls teaching about the Constitution one day and hitting upon the President's inaugural ceremony in the lesson.
And I realized, hey, that's going to be coming up here pretty soon. Wouldn't that be cool to go to that? I thought it would be like the world's ultimate field trip for us, you know? I mean, children singing traditional Lakota songs, patriotic songs as well, we thought would be a great way to represent South Dakota.
With help from U.S. Senator Tom Daschle, the drum group set out to raise $5,000, eventually hitting that goal with donations from across the country. A video from the trip shows the children rehearsing inside a Washington hotel room before the inaugural parade. The boys and girls drummed, sang, and danced at the event. The girls' leather moccasins turned rock hard as they danced on the wet coal pavement. Back in class with the kids, Mosner recalls that the students had a good time touring Washington sites, like the Jefferson Memorial and its 19-foot-tall statue of the historic leader.
And one of my students, Bradley, turned to me and said, holy, was Tom Jefferson really that tall? We had a whole collection of things Bradley said. As we were leaving D.C., and Harold was taking us, the bus driver was taking us to BWI Airport, where you could see plane after plane taking off over the horizon. And Bradley looked through the window and said, gee, look at all those planes. I hope there's some left when we get there.
But 8 months after the children came home to the reservation, a series of terrorist attacks destroyed the World Trade Center's Twin Towers in New York and damaged the Pentagon in Washington. 12-year-old Janelle Reynolds recalls seeing the Pentagon with a drum group. The association made the events of September 11th more strange and frightening.
I felt that I just saw that and now it was destroyed. I was kind of confused. Why would people do that? I have no clue because we didn't do anything to them.
The devastation shocked the students and teachers. The images on TV still haunt 11-year-old Desiree Edwards, one of the group's shawl dancers.
When I start thinking about it and feeling sad about them people that were jumping out the windows and all the people that died, I just go in my room and listen to the radio or turn on some music.
What is it about music that helps you out?
I don't know. It's just I like listening to music and singing and dancing and stuff like that.
The children talked among themselves and with teachers to try to understand what happened. Carrie Pizer is counselor for the Rosebud Sioux Elementary School. She says the fear, anger, and confusion manifested itself in many different ways among the students.
I had one student come in my room. He was building with Legos, and he built the Twin Towers and an airplane and flying the airplane into the Lego Twin Towers and looking at me to make sure that was okay to do, and I told him that was fine. That was his way to express what had happened.
In the past year, students and their families have watched the war on terrorism and developments in the Middle East. Brittany Gunhammer is a 12-year-old who shares her classmates' notion that the hijackers were a weird bunch of people who killed innocent civilians.
The people that died they're probably looking down and watching us and seeing if we're going to be that kind of people when we grow up.
Do you feel safe here in South Dakota?
Kind of. I don't really know, because they could fly a plane into Mount Rushmore or something.
But some kids are taking stock of such landmarks. 13-year-old Frankie Valandra was one of the singers at the inaugural performance. He says since the attacks, he looks proudly upon places like Mount Rushmore, the Jefferson Memorial, and the Capitol building.
They're more important to me now because they're targets for terrorists, because they're one of some of the most important things in the United States. And we pulled together as a nation, and we came through it as a nation.
And for Counselor Carrie Pizer, pulling together helped the students act on their feelings and not feel powerless. Pizer says a charity drive called Pennies for Peace went over well in the school.
We raised over $1,000, and some of that money went to the Red Cross, some went to the New York firefighters. I had a big card in each classroom. All the kids signed their name on the card, and I wrote a letter to the New York firefighters and told them this is what we did, and even though we're out in Rosebud, South Dakota, it still is affecting us, and then we mailed them part of that money.
Every part of the earth. It's sacred too, my people.
Last spring, the students had another chance to act on their thoughts about September 11th. A poetry program called Join in the Chant opened with a slideshow rotating old Lakota photographs with shots of the Twin Towers after being struck by airliners. Mosner says the images reminded the Rosebud Sioux students that loss, courage, and endurance are ingrained in their history through wars, disease, and assimilation through the centuries.
One of the images from the World Trade Center that we used in our demonstration was a chain-link fence covered with yellow ribbons. And it just so happened that that picture showed up right after you saw a group of Lakota women and children in an old, old photograph, and it just popped in my mind, who hung the yellow ribbons for them?
Concerns over September 11th will continue for some time. Many kids from the Drum Group worry about relatives in the military or how war with Iraq might encourage more terrorism. But the time the children shared as representatives of their state and tribe in President Bush's inaugural parade still instills them with a sense of pride that no disaster is able to shake. For Eros, I'm Brian Bull in Rosebud, South Dakota.
Indigenous populations lived all over the world pretty happily.
Revolution in America.
There's no way we're giving up this piece of land. There's no way we're going to surrender to anybody.
Revolution in America.
There's no way we're giving up this piece of land. There's no way we're going to surrender to anybody.
On the night of February 27th, 200 members and supporters of the American Indian Movement took over the small village of Wounded Knee, South Dakota. In order to guarantee sufficient time to voice their demands, the Indians detained the proprietor of the general store, along with members of his family and six others who lived in the trading post complex. Almost immediately after having established their position in Wounded Knee, roads into the town were blocked. first by the American Indian Movement and the next day by U.S. Marshals. Initial reports during the first full day of the Wounded Knee action said that AIM was holding the 11 residents hostage, but during that first day, anyone living in Wounded Knee was free to leave, contrary to reports by the Justice Department, who originally claimed that AIM kidnapped Clyde Gildersleeve and his family. Gildersleeve, owner of the trading post, assured the Justice Department that residents were in safe Wounded Knee and could leave at any time, but chose to remain. This cleared the way for members of the American Indian Movement to make their demands. Initially, those demands were for the Senate to begin an immediate investigation of conditions on the Pine Ridge Reservation, a study of the treaty violations by the United States against Native American Indian tribes, and an investigation and reorganization of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm DJ Microbrew, and I said that.